Hello and welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
We're going to look at Marvel poster book for Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man. This was their first poster book. And before we dive into that, Ed, tell us about Red Room.
You mean I don't get one copy? Red Room Comics, Murder on the Dark Web for Fun and Profit is the name of the game of Red Room Comics. Every issue is completely self-contained. So if you see an issue, scoop it up. It'll tell you a complete story. That you hear the Red Room in the background, right? You hear the metal scraping on metal, getting ready to sharpen and kill our next victim. You don't have these comics at your local comic shop? Don't fret. Go to the Fantagraphics website. We have limited copies available because, Jimmy, these things are going fast, man. Not to be worried, because there's going to be a trade paperback that we're going to start hustling pretty soon. If you want to read the comics ahead of time, go to my Patreon, patreon.com/EdPiskor. $3 for the archive there. Put up the strips every Tuesday. More than 150 pages worth of stuff. And the free comic book day comic is up there as a PDF that you can download today for free as a primer to get acclimated to what the series is about. If this imagery doesn't get you there already, I imagine that...
What, like, the series is about?
I imagine the nose just like peeling apart like cheese on a pizza right there.
I was going to do pizza tonight, Ed. Thanks.
What do you have, Jimmy?
You can join me on patreon.com, where you can see how I make books like Street Angel, Deadliest Girl Alive, which is still in print and available wherever you buy the comics that you buy, bookstores, comic book shops, or online. This is a collection of the full-color Image series of Street Angel books from the last couple of years. On my Patreon, you can see the original art for several of these stories. You can see the scripts, the layouts, the whole process by which I make the comics that I make. You can also download about a dozen out-of-print zines and mini-comics. If you're into my art, it's the perfect place to get all of it. Patreon.com/JimRugg.
So I actually don't know this poster book.
This comes out in 1990. So, or maybe it's 1991, January 1991. So this is shortly after McFarlane's Spider-Man comes out in 1990. You can see it here. Wow. But this is McFarlane at the top of his game. Spider-Man's hot, McFarlane's hot, and Marvel is just cashing in, man. This is near the height of the speculator boom. So, you know, you put McFarlane and Spider-Man on a book, you're going to sell a bunch of them, and I think that's what this is. But it's also a chance to see a bunch of McFarlane artwork. And, you know, cover art, you can see the table of contents here tell you the covers that we're going to be flipping through. And they remove the logo, so it's just really, let's show off some Todd McFarlane art. And at this point in his career, at this point in time, this would have been probably the stuff he was most known for, most successful at. And start off with your 3 million copy seller Spider-Man 1 artwork right there.
Count the spiders.
You can bet that I studied the hell out of this thing. I can remember trying to reproduce this with, like, early pen nibs. You know, when I started to got hold of brush and pen nibs and trying to figure out how to do this. Took a lot more than the tools to do this.
Isn't it funny, though, when you're a kid and you're, like, learning to draw by copying? Because you take everything that you see very literally. So you're trying to draw like the exact yes. amount of lines right there in the exact orientation because you like the way it looks and you trust these professionals to know what the hell they're doing and that they're doing their job properly. And like, so you have to have like, you know, two little lines going this yes. way, one up there just a little bit.
Yeah, the worst part to really study and emulate. But yeah. that was the stuff I was obsessed with, you know, all those crosshatch lines, all those weird way. Marks. But I love this cover, and one of the things that I loved about it is, like, Spider-Man's so big in it. You know, by having him crouch down like that, you were able to make this character on a cover that was several times the size of the cover. Really huge, you know, on the newsstand, kind of stood out, and I love this cover, man. I was so excited for this book to come out. It was the one I was anticipating, and starting with the cover, I was on board.
We, like, even back then, I loved this, too. I picked it up the second it came out. But I even, back then, I acknowledged, like, the flatness of that face and how weird that was to me.
It was, but then whenever you would see somebody that would draw some shadow in there to have, like, the nose or whatever, that part would look weird.
Yeah.
The distorted figure of Spider-Man, you know, one of the trademarks of McFarlane, I think, in terms of his Spider-Man, and something that would carry on after him. Interesting if you look at, like, pre-McFarlane Spider-Man and post-McFarlane Spider-Man and what's stuck. And it would be these, like, ridiculous anatomical distortions, just really bending him up.
He would kind of F up, in a way, like, a lot with this kind of foot where it's, like, overlapping like that. Because, like, what is this nub? And it's, like, all you have to do is just shift that shape a little bit.
There's so much, like you mentioned the flat face, which is pretty consistent, but there are all these other elements that they're a cartoon language. It's not what you think of as like a newspaper strip cartoon or editorial or something, but it's totally that cartoon language. He's just inventing certain shapes that we go, okay, yeah, it's a foot.
Hot shot in his comic, dude. Hot shot in that Spider-Man series, man. Got to do the Ghost Rider issue. Like, that comic caught on, was selling better than some of the X titles. So he's a businessman.
Yeah, put a skull in there. I feel like this is McFarlane from this point forward. We're going to see a lot of skulls in his work.
Kids like spikes and chains, bud.
Indeed they do. I love this crossover, though. That's probably one that we'll look at some point, because only two issues. That was an easy read, and it really, man, I liked Ghost Rider more than I liked Spider-Man at
that
time.
The Wolvie issue is dope, too, man. Here he is, man. Chris Benoit playing Captain America with the size of those arms.
Yeah, you could do an anatomy drawing based on this character.
We did do that. We laid some tracing paper over, traced things off, saw what the deal was. Very prominent prowl.
Towards the end of his Amazing Spider-Man run, about whenever I started buying comics, the assassination plot or something.
With Paladin, or as I called him back in those days, Paladin.
How about Juggernaut making an appearance? That's pretty cool. I don't know what this is from exactly. Is this the crossover? Is before he does the crossover with X-Force.
Yeah, this would be a Marvel Tales cover. And, you know, like that's what this X-Men thing coming up is as well. He would, when they started catching up and doing, like, you know, the Ross Andrew run of Spider-Man, you need to goose that a little bit, man. Let's get the top guy of the day to sell these little kids, to confuse them into thinking that they're going to get another bite of the McFarlane apple.
Yeah, man, what a departure. Always Juggernaut's fun character, kind of that monster heel-like character.
Mm-hmm.
Always love those characters, still kind of do. Fun designs whenever they're that big and top-heavy. So Marvel Tales, another one. I don't know how many of those covers he did, but he was sort of the regular on that for a while, and I would buy some of those issues just based on it's a McFarlane cover, man. I'd at least look through them.
Say what you will about him. This ain't maybe the best example, but he designs iconic covers. He designs iconic imagery, and he recently did a panel with J. Scott Campbell. I think he brought a couple of people on board. It was for San Diego Comic-Con, virtual, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he and J. Scott Campbell talking about cover design and things, and you get a little glimpse into his thought process on the design of stuff. And, you know, I think he's a worthwhile guy to listen to with that kind of thing, because, you know, how many iconic covers does one have in their career? And he's got several.
Yeah, quite a few. Bringing Wolverine in, always a good deal, McFarlane doing Wolverine. A really good Storm image there, I think. I like McFarlane at this time, and I always loved whenever he would draw a new character, not new, but new to him, or not the main characters in the book, because it was always a cool interpretation. That was one of those like early like style indicators for me of like, oh yeah, man, you know, McFarlane Storm. That's a great Storm. Like, how's he doing this?
He's good at things that don't have hard edges. Smoke, water, blood, mist.
Whatever this is.
And go ask Ditko, man. He created that shit. But when you get these big hands, so you're a little kid and you're figuring out, like, okay, man, I can draw something this big that has all the lines and stuff. But then what happens when you have to, like, zoom in on a hand, for instance? You don't know how to, like, where to put those kinds of lines. And he was always kind of, like, good with that. Always kind of figured it out.
What's crazy, and I don't know how well it shows up on screen, is that this Spider-Man's all rendered. I think that I used to see this cover and just go, oh, it's a silhouette, you know, it's this green silhouette. It's almost like a color hold or something. I can see now, like, all the webbing on his costume, everything is drawn in there. Funny how much that drops out when you look at this cover. But I feel like this is one of his iconic, you know, it's not his biggest known covers, but I feel like this is one of those very striking covers of his.
It's so subtle that I bet you if we asked production and stuff, I bet you it didn't turn out the way they wanted it to. Because, you know, you're trying to sell the Mysterio glass.
Right.
And I bet you it didn't print the way
it is
wanted
fun to
it
see
to.
Those, like, do an effect. Make a glass effect. How do you do that in black and white line art or the limited color palettes that are available at that time? And now you're starting to get into some of the iconic stuff when Venom shows up.
Look at that mandible jaw.
I think this was a cover for a trade paperback collection of this stuff too, not just a an issue, but one that would be reused, something they would commonly do in the early days of the trade paperback collections.
Yeah. It makes sense because he never really drew Venom this way, man. Like it was Larson who kind of brought that to the table. So seeing him adopt that, in fact, man, I remember like on the phone with friend, like my homeboy Jason, and I'm like, McFarlane's Venom is so weak, and we're arguing, and my dad is looking at me and saying, "Where?" Like my dad would be canceled if you heard the shit that he said to me when I was on that phone conversation.
That's real funny.
Fully canceled.
And there you go, man, for a Venom image.
You see these eyebrows, you can't not think of Hakuto Shinken, right?
Very true. Very true.
They would adopt manga aesthetic sometimes.
Yeah, this is super small. Late 80s, early 90s. Like, he would have been seeing that stuff. That would have been in comic shops.
Yeah. And it was more popular than a lot of the Jobber Big 2 comics.
And if all you're doing is looking around to see what catches your eye, you know that stuff's popping.
Mm-hmm. And he seems like a numbers guy. Like, you know, those comics are doing well. So, like, let me look at it and steal some bits.
Starting to get into that iconic cover territory here.
Absolutely.
You know, you see McFarlane doing himself with the... How many times? You could probably put up 10 versions of this cover. A few by McFarlane, a lot by other people.
A lot by him. Like, I feel like on Nickel and Dime Spawn issues, yep, he draws Spawn this way. High contrast Xerox, mm-hmm, behind Spidey right there.
Yeah, I was looking at that image and thinking about where that comes from. Is that public domain? Kind of interesting to think of using the tech that was available, right? Like, yeah, a photocopier, like maybe a public domain photo, and working it in.
So freaking wise. Like, you know, you come on board, you got the black suit, and then you put up a fuss and say, I want to draw the Spider-Man that's on the underoos. And that's meaningful to a little kid, because you see the toys, you see the underoos, you see all this stuff. Now you're going to go buy a comic and like, what is this? What, I missed out on something. I was there, you know, I was there. I missed out on something because this ain't the Spider-Man my parents are telling me about. This ain't the Spider-Man in the newspaper.
Or on television.
On TV.
Cartoons.
And like, even like after Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends, there would be cartoons where I would watch a shitty cartoon just to see that Spider-Man at the end that said like Marvel Productions or something. And it would just be like a Spider-Man emotion. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
like,
yes,
at the
I
end
do
of a cartoon. Mm-hmm. And that black costume ain't that. And he knows that kids ain't into that shit. So, like, fuck all your stupid storylines. Give me the... Let me draw the real Spider-Man.
It's a good point. You know, especially when you think of what this launches in his career. Could it have been done without the traditional costume?
Right.
It's a lot of factors that go into super success. And it's hard to pick and choose which of those details are you could shift around and still find that success.
I know that's the outfit, but I always prefer the Eric Larson like lab coat suit gimmick.
Yeah, that's an interesting update. I was lingering here to kind of like look at the water tower, you know, thinking of the water tower as a Ditko staple in Spider-Man. Obviously a New York rooftop staple, but I associate with Spider-Man a lot. And kind of fun to see McFarlane throw one on there.
Another thing that McFarlane's good at is these, like, swooping, designy shapes. Like, always keeping these...
A lot of motion.
These things very interesting.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, too, when you think of, like, the webbing and how McFarlane would approach webbing. Not that different with Doc Ock's arms.
And now we're getting to the part where, like, okay, if this is a poster book, like, what? That's a poster? It's a little slight.
Yeah, Action Comics homage. Even signs it with a la Siegel and Schuster.
Look at that, man. Little Clark
Not
Kent.
Not after.
Yeah. Look at those feet.
You know, this being Clark Kent, like, wonder who this is supposed to be, what that's a reference to.
Stan Lee without the gimmick on his head.
Lizard getting his renaissance in that Spider-Man, the Spider-Man series McFarlane's launching.
That was the cool thing with McFarlane. Every month, I wanted to see his take on whatever... Villain
exactly.
Du jour. Like, let me see what he does with him, because I love the way he draws Spider-Man.
There's your weak Venom mouth.
Yeah.
Early days of Venom.
Yeah, man.
But some blood.
Big deal. That was a big deal to us, man.
That's how you sold wrestling covers. Maybe that's how you sell a couple extra units of Spider-Man. Sticks and stones. Look at those two guys. McFarlane wasn't giving away anything.
Look at that pink guy. She got a little conjunctivitis. Because he hit her with the Spider-Man thwip.
This is a fun cover for, you know, a Venom issue. But one, it's nightmarish, right? You know, being closed in on. But it also gives you that bigger Spider-Man figure that I was talking about from Spider-Man number one cover. I always think that's power if you can figure out how to make those figures bigger. I don't know what's happening here. This is like some kind of printing tech where they're using like that gray screen. DC would do this. I forget what it was called, but it would almost be like a gray wash or something that they would put on, and it would kind of have a photo-like effect if done right. But here it's very muddy. It feels like they were trying it and maybe didn't work perfect.
I still remember that one Taskmaster issue where there's a splash page. A Taskmaster has all these tombstones around him, and it's like Ditko, Ramita, Friends. And I'm like, that is cutting promos. He's saying, you're all dead. McFarlane's on the scene, man.
This is one of those, not sure this one needed to be in here. not the best. I can't remember. I have so many of these covers, and it's like trying to remember, like, how does this one get onto my radar? This one stands out to me with the two goblins. I feel like that's a pretty fun chance to do classic villains. The lettering, you know, it's almost a reference to that old school awesome cover lettering that Marvel had for decades, but we're seeing it updated where, like, you're trying to put in logos and stuff, so it's not quite the same. I forget who that letterer was that's credited with all those cover blurbs, but it was so distinct for like 2 decades.
Artie Simek, man, would at least do the interior burst that would be like that.
Chameleon. Do you remember Hydro Man?
Yeah, I had this issue, man.
That's a funny-looking character.
It's just nothing.
Yeah, it isn't. It's a dude in a black t-shirt coming out of the water.
All that said, this kind of shit is really not easy to draw. You could do real shitty versions of that, and he does it well.
It is hard to draw that stuff. Explosions, debris, all of that stuff is kind of... You take it for granted because who cares? It's splashing water as long as it reads as splashing water. When you draw it, man, it's a different... Then you start to care about it.
There he is, Paladin.
Silver Sable gets her own book shortly after this.
Oh, yeah, she does, man. I had...
not as successful without McFarlane drawing her.
Go figure, right? Like, I had the comic, like, the first appearance of her, and I knew it was the first appearance because of the back of the Marvel Universe Series 2 card, and I, like, held on to... I had the first Puma, too, that I think was, like, Ron Friend's issue. That was my era, you know?
Sure.
And I just held on to it because I'm like, I have the first appearance, like, you know... Just, first appearance of Spider-Man goes for this. First appearance is like, but I have the first Rage from Avengers. You know what I'm saying? Like that was my era, and I really like.
What a bunch of names! It's so disappointing to hear these character names roll off.
Rage.
You just need Marvel Universe to announce they're coming to the movies, right?
Yeah, isn't right.
Those Rockies will flip overnight.
Jimmy, it's crazy that we live in a world where John Cena's playing Peacemaker.
That is true.
That's a deep cut.
I won't argue with that.
I don't know this. I don't have that. I don't know what that is.
I don't know either.
Maybe that's another Marvel Tales.
Yeah, it could be. Kraven, you know, it's from that Kraven storyline, so I don't know if that's a reprint somewhere, a pinup, or what that is. It's kind of odd looking. Hard to imagine that as a cover.
Yeah.
But Kraven saw a character that he was using at least a tiny bit, the corpse of Kraven, in that first Spider-Man arc. So, the Marvel poster book... interesting artifact of a time period where I think Marvel's just flooding the markets, like anything they can do to push their competition off the racks and get that square footage, and McFarlane's Spider-Man always seems to do that trick.
McFarlane moved the needle for Marvel at that era. McFarlane moves the needle for cartoonist kayfabe. Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell, we'll notify you when new vids are available. What do you have, Jimmy?
Join me on patreon.com/JimRug, where you can see how I make Street Angel, Deadliest Girl Alive, original art, scripts, layouts, all that process stuff, as well as a dozen out-of-print zines and mini-comics that you can download when you join me on patreon.com/JimRug.
Red Room Comics in the Wild, Murder on the Dark Web for fun and profit, get them at your local comic shop. Each issue is completely self-contained, so if you see an issue, scoop it up, you're going to get a complete experience. If you want to check the comics out as they sort of roll out, I put them on my Patreon before they hit paper. Patreon.com/EdPiskor. I have a link tree in the description below this video. I'll take you to the Fantagraphics website to order the comics. Take you to the Patreon to read the comics ahead of time.
Subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video. You can also find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, we have some stuff to prepare for, man. Given the marching orders, we're going to be on our way.
Read more comics.